Have you ever wondered why some banks offer promotional savings rates that come crashing down after a few months? You deserve better. And when you bank with Capital One, that's exactly what you'll get. With a Capital One savings account, you'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Plus, you can open an account online in just 5 minutes. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.
Hello and welcome to the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvedo. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos. Great to be back here at the Back Nine Report one more time. We're one more week closer to the Masters. That's what we're all looking for. But this is also a very big week because it's a Tiger week. But you know what, Carlos? We got the Toledo Golf Show going on this weekend here in town. That's always a great time to connect with local courses, the pros, and the resorts that are offering deep discounts for summer golf getaways. Carlos, the temperature here in Ohio is going to reach into the 40s this week. Hopefully it's going to melt away this 6 inches of snow cover that has accumulated. And maybe it's a sign that spring will get here again and allow us to get back to the golf course. But before we get going tonight, Carlos, Back Nine Report is happy to announce a drawing for a dream golf trip to Alabama. Bama is a golf lover's paradise with over 150 courses, and this is your chance to stay and play golf on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, Purcell Farms, and Alabama's Gulf Coast in June of this year. The trip starts on Sunday, June 3rd, with tickets to the final round of the U.S. Women's Open at Shoal Creek near Birmingham. On Monday, you get to play 18 holes at Farm Links, which is a wonderful facility. After that, you drive down to Mobile, spend the night at the historic Battle House, and I got to tell you, that's one of my favorite places. It's absolutely gorgeous. And play the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail's Magnolia Grove on Tuesday. After you're around at Magnolia Grove, you drive around the bay to the east side, stay at the Marriott Grand Hotel, and Wednesday play the Robert Trent Jones Lakewood Golf Club. That's a wonderful place. The beach, the hotel sits right on the beach. You can walk right out of your room right onto the beach. It's wonderful. You spend the night, next night in Gulf Shores, which is only about a 20-minute drive. You play Kiva Dunes and Peninsula Club on Thursday, and then Kraft Farms on Friday before heading home. It's a great, great trip. That area, it's one of my favorites, South Alabama. I love it, the Gulf Coast. To sign up, Carlos, simply visit the website roadtripgiveaway.com. That's roadtripgiveaway.com. This is a great golf adventure. I've personally played these courses except for Farm Links, and I can attest you will not be disappointed with any of them. Again, to enter, visit roadtripgiveaway.com.
All right, there you have it. And, of course, watch for our social media pages. We're going to be blasting this one to you, so you better get there. One question, can we apply, Fred?
Can we? You're out, Carlos. I'm sorry. X you out.
No, that hurts. That hurts. Hey, there'll be a lucky winner, and you'll enjoy it for sure. But, hey, let's go now to the show, and we're going to have our VIG, very important guest of the week. Today is Eloise Trainer, so don't miss it. That's the founder of what is right now known as the Symetra Tour, so you don't want to miss that interview. But, as usual, we start with the weekend backspin, where Fred and I recap the weekend's action. And, Fred, there was a sighting of the top three players in the world at Pebble Beach, at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Which one of the three was the winner?
Well, You know, a couple of them did okay, but they got blown away by a little lesser known. You know, Carlos, God shone down his light upon Pebble Beach last week and gave golf fans a glimpse of the beauty he created at this iconic seaside golf course. What a week of gorgeous weather on the Monterey Peninsula. And it brought out great play from the top players. The leaderboard was littered all week with big names. World number one, Dustin Johnson. Number two, John Rahm. A resurging Jason Day, as well as the ageless Phil Mickelson. Will all of that star power and the AT&T National Pro-Am, a relative unknown, and a lefty to boot, Ted Potter Jr. was able to use consistency and a marvelous short game to prevail to earn his second PGA Tour title, and by far the biggest win of his career. Potter was consistently 30 to 40 yards behind Dustin Johnson when they played together on Sunday, but he used accuracy and excellent short game to get and hold the lead at Pebble Beach. He was 6 for 6 in up and down saves on Sunday and won by 3 shots. Those par saves were huge and shows the importance of a solid short game. Didn't someone just talk about getting out and working on your chipping and putting on last week's show? I think I remember a rant about
you
that
did.
Very topic.
You
yeah.
Did. You did.
So
there,
it works, folks. Yep. Johnson's effort was somewhat surprising on Sunday. He had played great over the first 3 rounds alongside his kind of pseudo-father-in-law, Wayne Gretzky. Although the team was only 4 shots behind the leaders in the pro-am portion of the tournament after 3 rounds, and it qualified for play on Sunday, the great one had to withdraw due to an ailing back. With 4 birdies and 4 bogeys, Johnson posted an par 72 on Sunday and dropped into a tie for runner-up, 3 shots behind Potter Jr. Johnson never looked comfortable in the final round. The wedge game that has been so solid for him over the past couple of years deserted him in the final round. He was missing his spots with short approaches into the greens. If you miss your spots at Pebble, you will be left with impossible putts or chips. You know, Carlos, that's what separates these great golf courses from kind of the run-of-the-mill courses. If you miss your spot just a little bit on these greens, you're looking at really difficult 2 putts. Chipping sometimes becomes almost impossible if you're short-sighted, depending on the slope and the angle. And instead of, you know, on an easier course where there's not quite as much slope on the greens, you can get it up and down from everywhere. On the really good courses, that gets really difficult, like Augusta, like here at Pebble Beach and some of the others. So the award, however, for the worst round of the day went to John Rahm. Rahm began the final round near the leaders in 5th place, but his Sunday 4 over par 76 included 4 bogeys and a double on the back 9 for a 42. That knocked him down 21 spots to T26. Next to Potter's unexpected triumph and Dustin Johnson's collapse, Phil Mickelson's final round 67 moved him into a tie for runner-up with Ches Reavy, who collected his 2nd consecutive runner-up, tied with Jason Day and Dustin Johnson, 3 shots behind the winner. Phil made birdies at 14, 16, and 17 to get into position. If Potter should falter, but the other lefty stayed the course and left Phil with a solid top 10 finish. Phil says he's working out twice daily and looks to be re-energized. Carlos, you made the comment to me that Phil does not want to be a captain's pick for the Ryder Cup team and wants to make it on his own merit. Well, I would argue that he desperately wants to erase the 6 runners-ups in the U.S. Open and complete his career Grand Slam this year at Shinnecock. Finally, Jason Day was able to win last week, but his game did not hold up under the pressure of the final round at a tough course like Pebble Beach. He was missing fairways, which is death, and did not putt extremely well. Although he did display a masterful short game around the greens to keep the round from getting out of hand and finish runner-up. Also want to mention that Jimmy Walker may be getting back to form as he finished T8, and Paul Casey had another strong week also coming in at T8. Carlos, I'm going to yield the floor to you and ask if you have any comments about the field, and then I'll finish my comments concerning the AT&T after that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, for Potter, marks an incredible, I have to say it's an incredible comeback for Potter Jr. because the left-hander, you might not remember, but I'm going to bring it back to you. He broke his ankle during the Canadian Open of 2014. The damage was so bad that he didn't play another tournament for 2 years. So he started his way back last year to the PGA Tour through the Web.com Tour, but with only 4 top tens and 46 missed cuts in his last 83 PGA Tour starts. I know, Potter contemplating a return to the Masters in April, but definitely is seen now very confident after this, because the way that he played against the top players in the world in a top class, very difficult course. I mean, right now it's just uphill for him. I mean, downhill, because he just reached the top after that incredible comeback. He didn't think. He was really thinking, after breaking the ankle and knowing how bad it was, if he would even happen to swing again or less continue with his career. So it's unbelievable for him. And for Dustin Johnson, definitely a disappointing weekend. You said it, he was going into the final round tied for the lead, but I would have expected him to see off a man that was ranked 242 places below him, but he struggled badly to a round of 72, and like you said, he shared second. Also, again, I'm worried about what it's going on with John Rahm. He's placing himself into contention there within the leaders, and then on Sunday he's just faltering. So again, his mind is playing tricks on him. He really definitely has to improve that. And to finalize, before giving it back to you, the Pro-Am tournament, like you mentioned, Kevin Streelman and Larry Fitzgerald, they were comfortably ahead, and they finished 7 off clear of the field. So Larry Fitzgerald and Kevin Streelman were the winners in the Pro-Am.
Yeah, I haven't even mentioned Jordan Spieth. He finished well down the leaderboard at T20 or something. He really wasn't on his game that well. And you mentioned Potter's ankle. They fixed it with, I think they put 20-some screws in it, and rods and the whole deal. And it wasn't working for him. And he had him take all the screws and stuff out. So he had 2 surgeries over a couple years there where they put all that stuff in, then they had to take it all back out. So and then he had to find a game after all of that. So, really big kudos to him. I probably didn't make enough about that. For him coming back and winning, that really was a fantastic story. Carlos, a little sidebar here. There was an article about Dustin Johnson crediting Gretzky with helping him get to number one. Gretzky, of course, is Paula's Dustin Johnson's, I guess, fiance, you would say. The mother of his 2 children, that's her father, and playing along with him, you could see he was relaxed, he was enjoying it the first 3 days, and then when he couldn't play on Sunday, they were relegated to being a threesome in the last group of the day, so they're constantly waiting, especially on the back 9. Johnson said he sought out Gretzky's guidance and advice, which has aided in his ascension up the world rankings. Johnson often picks the NHL icon's brain and said his support and belief did wonders for his confidence. They become regular golf partners, talk for hours about how to handle sports fame, pressure, and expectations. And Gretzky has put this in his mind and always stresses to never settle, never be happy with where you're at. Be reaching, always be stretching, always looking to get better. So, along with his improved short game, Gretzky's tutoring seems to have paid big dividends for Dustin Johnson. And as I mentioned, not playing on Sunday, Gretzky heading to withdraw, really kind of affected Johnson, I think, a little bit. So, but I have to say, even though it was slow, the waiting did not seem to bother Ted Potter Jr. as he continued to stripe it down every fairway and find greens and get it up and down when he didn't. And then, Carlos, I'm going to give a little rant here, just a little short one. You know, I love Bill Murray as an actor. I love his characters that he plays. He has done amazing work. But as a golfer, or rather an entertainer on the golf course, I'm kind of tired of his shtick. I love Pebble Beach, but find watching the AT&T Pro-Am nearly impossible. I tried to watch some of it on Friday and Saturday, but they kept showing that Tom Shoe guy hacking it around. Man, I mean, he was hacking, and I don't know why they kept showing that guy. Yes, they did show some amazing shots by some amateurs, and I would not want to take my game on national TV like these hacks do, but really, I know these guys or their companies pay a lot of money to get to play for 3 days with pros on the Monterey Peninsula. With the production of TV and the size of the PGA Tour, the Bing Crosby Clambake has lost all semblance of what Der Bingle meant for it to be, a friendly game between celebrities and professionals. I'm sure the producer tried to get as many amateurs as possible valuable camera time for the respective companies, but it was too much. The weather was amazing. It was a strong field, but I found CBS spent way too much time on the amateurs and not enough on the pros, especially in the early rounds, Carlos.
You gotta understand, you said it right there. It's about the sponsors and what they're paying. So at the end of the day, this tournament is just about that. It's about the celebrities as much as it's going to be about the pros. And whether we like it or not, people there go just to see those antics by Bill Murray and everybody else. That's part of the entertainment. I assure you one thing. Those celebrities wouldn't be there. It wouldn't have, for sure. I know. It wouldn't be as big as of a draw like the people that are showing. They just show up to see that kind of entertainment. Yes, the golf is good and all that, but I am sure that a lot of people that go there just go for the show, for the showing of this celebrity. It's just much like it happened at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. I mean, it's the same thing. It's about the show at that moment, and you just got to play up to that, and that's why they are going to be doing that at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am for the foreseeable future. I don't see that a change. We might not like it, but that's the way it's going to continue to be, Fred. So, anyway, moving on. Kita Dej Afi Barnrad of Thailand. He defeated Australia's James Needies by 2-1 in the final to win the ISPS Hand That World Super 6 Perth at Lake Carinap Country Club in Perth, Australia. Afi Barnrad claimed his fourth European Tour title with a victory in a thrilling ISPS Hand That World Super 6 Perth. The Thai golfer defeated James Needies by 2-1 and was a late entry into the tournament and had never played at the course at Lake Carinap coming into the event. After 54 holes of stroke play, Afi Barnrad had to go through a playoff to make sure the last 24 and progress to the six-hole match play contest on the final day. The 28-year-old then had to come through five matches and complete 35 holes of golf on the Sunday to take the title. Afi Barnrad secured wins over Ben Eccles, Yusaku Miyasato, Sean Crocker, and Lucas Abert to set up the final with James Needies, who had beaten Nick Collin, Dimitrios Papadatos, Colin O'Reilly, and Sam Horsfield. Needies went one up through one in the final, but Afi Barnrad leveled it on the third. On the fourth, Afi Barnrad made a superb eagle two on the drivable par four to move ahead, and he followed up with a birdie at the fifth to win the match 2-1. I mean, he said that it has been an awesome week. He doesn't explain why or how, but he was very happy because he was working very hard. In the last few months, he was getting really, really close, but finally he says that he has seemed to get it all together finally, and that's how this victory came up. This was the fourth European Tour title for Afi Barnrad, and he's second in a playoff format. He also won the 2015 Saltire Energy Paul Laurie match play. The victory will see him climb back into the top 50 in the official world golf rankings. Another Thai golfer, Prom Misawat, had led through the stroke break stages of the competition. He was 12 under par through 54 holes, but he went straight into round two of the match play stages, but fell at that hurdle, losing by two holes to amateur Minwoo Lee of Australia. And by the way, Lee lost in the quarterfinals to England's Sam Horsfield. The Englishman was then knocked out by James Needys in the semis, and in the end, he had to settle for fourth place. He lost in consolation match to another Australian, Lucas Abird. So the experiment continues there for the European Tour with the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth, which is that combination of 54 holes of stroke play, and then they go into a playoff match on Sunday. And at least for the fans, it was a great show, but still, we have to see more of the world top players racking up there. But I think it's going to be very difficult when you're placing it against the AT&T Preble Beach Pro-Am on the other side of the pond.
Yeah, Carlos, I did not watch any of the Perth tournament. I don't know if you got to see any of it or not, but this format, it doesn't, it's not drawing the best field. And so it's a little different. It's one of Pelley's, you know, experiments. Do you think this thing's going to make it another couple of years? What are you thinking?
I think they have to change its schedule. They have to be against another tournament that it can really draw some star power. And I don't know also that being in Australia at this early, maybe if it's later in the year or earlier in the season for them, because before the PGA Tour starts catching fire, if they could change just in the schedule, which is when a lot of people start going to Asia, at least the men start to play down there, I think that it would be better for it. I don't see it when you have to go to Pebble Beach and you're coming from the Middle East. A lot of those players are going to prefer to stay in the States and not do the full travel the other way. So I think it's a good format. The people enjoy it. The players that play it like it. But to attract better players, they have to change the schedule where it is right now. That's the way I see it.
Okay. Carlos, we had a Champions Tour event back-to-back weeks, last week and this week. You had the Boca Raton Championship, and we better alert the media. Oh, we are the media. Bernhard Langer faltered over the final two holes on Sunday and lost to Mark Calcavecchia.
Are you talking about the same?
The Iron Man, the guy that won like seven events or whatever he won last year, and you know had the Player of the Year stolen out from under him or whatever. Calc had not won since 2015. He was the leader all week, but a bogey at number 16 on Sunday dropped him into a tie with Langer. That's when the German did something most unusual. He bogeyed both 17 and 18 to give Calcavecchia the win. Plus, the event was played in Palm Beach, which is a home game for Langer. The 1989 Champion Golfer of the Year opened the week with a 64 par to 66 in the second round, and his 2 under par 70 on Sunday was good enough for the win. Calc said, "I just didn't think it would happen again. These guys are so good out here. The level of play is just insane, including Mr. Langer. Obviously, it's so hard, I can't tell you. I think I made enough putts, and sometimes the good Lord pencils you in, and this week was meant to be." Fred Funk was third at 13 under after a 67. David Toms had a 67 to reach 12 under. Carlos, over to you.
I still cannot believe what you said about Bernhard Langer.
It's an anomaly.
He practically hand over the win. No.
He did.
Something. No. Stop the press. I mean, we have to change this. This is unbelievable. But anyway, there was action on the web.com tour where former LSU golfer Ben Taylor cruised to his first professional victory, winning the web.com tour's Club Columbia Championship by 6 strokes over 4 golfers, including ex-LSU All-American Sam Burns. Taylor, who's a 25-year-old native of London, entered the final round with a three-stroke lead, and despite a bogey on the first hole, he was never caught. He birdied 4, 6, 7, and 8 to pull away, eventually shooting a 3-under par 68 to finish at 15-under for the tournament. Before Sunday, Taylor's biggest claim to golfing fame may have been making the clinching putt in LSU's national championship match with Southern California to win the 2015 NCAA title. Burns, the 2017 Collegiate Player of the Year as a sophomore, also shot a 68 to move up 10 spots in the final round and tied for second his higher web.com finish, Fred.
Hey, there was a nice little tournament on the Ladies European Tour. There's a big tournament this week with co-sanctioner you're going to talk about here in a little bit. But last week on the Ladies European Tour, Jiayi Shin fired a final round 64, collected her 50th. I didn't realize she'd won that many, but 50 career titles she's won around the world. She came from three shots back to slip past Minji Lee to claim the Canberra Classic. Shin was ranked number one in the world in 2010, 2011, but has just been a steady player over the past couple of years. She won the 2013 Women's Australian Open on this same Royal Canberra and said, "I'm so excited I can't tell you. Royal Canberra is my favorite golf course in the world. I have great memories from that final round with Lydia Ko." Minji Lee was coming off a win last week at the Oats Vic Open, was a favorite after carding a 9-under par 63 in the second round, but she ended with a disappointing 1-over par 73. Shin bested a quality field in Australia, and Van Dam finishing third, Pernilla Lindbergh fourth, and two very good friends of Back Nine Report, Holly Clybourne and Beth Allen, were fifth and sixth. Carlos, your girl Aditi Ashok, finished T7th with Kylie Henry. Georgia Hall was T9 along with Carolyn Hedwall and Letitia Ross and Dorica. Laura Davies, still out there getting it done. She finished T34. Carlos, that's all I have.
And with that, we wrap up our weekend backspin. Now we're going to take you to next week's action, where we go to the four call or the quick previews. And, of course, the big news goes to the Genesis Open on the PGA Tour. Tiger Woods is going to be there with a with the
who?
Top players in the world. Tiger Woods.
Who?
So
who?
Tell us all about that. Tell us all about
Isn't
that.
Isn't he playing on the Champions Tour yet?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Oh, okay.
It's close.
The stars will shine in L.A. this week as a stellar field is set to tee it up at Riviera for the Genesis Open. Riviera has been the site of some phenomenal golf moments over the years, and this will be the 55th time the L.A. Open has been held on the course. The 144-player field includes four of the top 10 players in the official world golf ranking, well as 14 of the top 25, plus three World Golf Hall of Fame members. 21 major championship winners, accounting for 52 major titles, plus the field has a total of 373 PGA trophies. So it's a pretty good field, Carlos. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't forget that guy you mentioned, that Tiger Woods guy. Tournament director Mike Antolini said the buzz surrounding this year's Genesis Open is off the charts, and for good reason. We're all excited for Tiger's return to Riviera for the first time in more than a decade. He'll join a field of golf's top young stars and established greats vying to become the next Genesis Open champion. Dustin Johnson is set to defend his title, make up for his flop last week. Throw in Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, 2017 Rookie of the Year Xander Schauffele, and you got a recipe for a spectacular event in La La Land. Just to add a bit more spice, Tiger is going to be paired with Rory and Justin Thomas for the first two rounds. I caught a little bit of Tiger's presser today. He talked about flying out here with Justin. Justin evidently hits a ride with him. And they were talking about the first time that Tiger played when he was 16 years old in the L.A. Open at Riviera. Justin was not born yet. So that made him feel a little old. And Tiger does not like Riviera that well. He's never played very well there. He's always made the cut, but he's never I don't even know if he has a top 10. I didn't pay attention, didn't look it up, but he's never he's never really done that well there. But Carlos, you can catch all the action, the early action on Golf Channel, and then of course CBS has the coverage on the weekend.
Yeah, Tiger Woods, his foundation runs the tournament, so he's playing for the first time since 2006. That day, that year, he withdrew after two rounds with the flu. And also, Jim Furyk, Ryder Cup captain, is going to make his 2018 debut. He's playing on a sponsor's exemption because of shoulder injury. As you might remember, it's his first start since the PGA Championship in August. For DJ, he will complete one full year at number one in the world. He becomes only the fifth player to be number one for a full year, joining, of course, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Greg Norman, and Nick Faldo. And also want to mention before I move on to the LPGA, Cameron Champ is playing on the Charlie Sifford exemption awarded to the advancement of diversity in golf, and that is worth mentioning. So Cameron Champ, well-deserving. Enjoy your time there with the world's best players. That I just had to get it in there. Anyway.
Yeah, glad you caught it. I kind of forgot about it. Glad you caught that. I usually mention that, and I forgot all about looking that up. Sorry.
No, that's why we're a team. You missed it, I get it. I missed it, you get it. So that's the way it is. So, hey, let's move on to the LPGA Tour, the ISPS Handa Women's Australian Open. It's going to be played at the Kooyanga Golf Club at Adelaide in Australia. That is a par 72, 6,599 yards. The purse is going to be $1.3 million with a winner's share of $195,000. The defending champ is Hannah Yang. Last time out in the first tournament of the year, Brittany Lincecum won the Pure Silk Bahamas LPGA Classic. The LPGA Tour begins its first international swing with Australia, Thailand, and Singapore the next 3 weeks before starting its domestic schedule in Arizona. Yang won last year with three birdies and an eagle over the final six holes. The field features 10 of the top 25 from the world ranking, including Soyeon Ryu, Arya Yutanagan, Brooke Henderson, and Lydia Ko. Those four are just enough to make it a great tournament to watch. Ko is beginning her season with more changes. Her caddy is Johnny Scott, who used to work for Laura Davis. Also, the former number one has left Gary Gilchrist and hired as her coach Ted Oh, who qualified for the 1993 U.S. Open when he was 16. So he should identify there with Ko. Ko has now gone 35 starts on the LPGA Tour since her last victory in July of 2016. Seems like ages ago that she was just beating the world. Brittany Lincecum, who won the Pure Silk Bahamas LPGA Classic in the season opener, is not playing. So if you want to watch it, television, Wednesday through Saturday, it's going to be 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. on the Golf Channel. Next week, they're going to be playing in Thailand on the LPGA, Fred.
Yeah, we got another tournament here. We got the Chubb Classic. The guys move over from Palm Beach across the state to Naples. Fred Couples is the defending champion. Also on the field are Bernhardt again, Jerry Kelly, David Thom, Steve Stricker, Scott McCarron, last week's winner Mark Calcavecchia, and European stars Miguel Angel Jimenez and Colin Montgomery. Kelly has been playing well at the start of this year and could be the favorite heading into the week. But you should never count Bernhardt Langer out, and I'm picking Monty to have a really big year this year, so I'm going to mention Colin Montgomery again also. The Golf Channel will have all the coverage of the Chubb Classic, Carlos.
Hey, you know what caught my eye there? Steve Stricker, who played in the next-to-last group this past weekend at Pebble Beach, and he's a past champion at Riviera, he said, nope, I'm going to play the PGA Tour champion this week. So, wow, that was amazing to see him there. But, hey, that's interesting to know. And David Thoms finished fourth this past week, and his fourth consecutive finish in the top five on the PGA Tour Champions is going to be there. So that's a huge mention about players that are playing good. Hey, David Thomas is really playing very well. And sorry for Freddie Couples. I mean, he's still coping with back issues. He's not back to defend his title. So that's too bad for a Boom Boom. But, hey, there's still plenty of star power there to watch the Chubb Classic. And it's going to be there, like you said, in Naples, Florida. And on the European Tour, the other tournament on the major tours that is going to be played is the NBO Oman Golf Classic that is played at the Al Moush Golf Club in Muscat, Oman. That's a par 72, 7,365 yards. The purse is just $1.75 million. This is a new tournament on the European Tour, so there's no defending champion. At the Race to Dubai leadership, Hankar Sharma is going to be there. This NBO Oman Golf Classic was part of the Challenge Tour the last 3 years, and now it has been stepped up to the European Tour event. Oman becomes the 44th country to have hosted an European Tour event. Alexander Levy at number 62 is the highest-ranked player in the field. Ryder Cup captain from the European Tour, from the Europeans, Thomas Bjorn, is playing and turns 47 on Sunday. Bjorn has won twice in the Middle East in Dubai and Qatar. He remains the only player to go 72 holes in the same group with Tiger Woods and win that happened in Dubai in 2001. Sharma, who's the only two-time winner on the European Tour this year, is playing, like I mentioned. He's ranked number 72 in the world, looking to improve on that, and he's playing really good. That's the player I'm going to be watching this weekend there. The field includes the amateur Hassan Al-Rumhi, who will be the first player from Oman to compete in an European Tour event, so best of luck to him. After this, if you want to watch it, Thursday through Friday, 12:30 to 3:30 a.m., 5 to 8 a.m. in the Golf Channel. Saturday and Sunday is going to be 3 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. also on the Golf Channel. And next week, they're going to be playing the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters on the European Tour. With that, Fred, I know you have some words after we wrap up now from Boyne.
You got it. Boyne Resort in northern Michigan features 10 golf courses at three different locations around Petoskey, Michigan. What other golf resort can you visit and have the option of playing 10 very different golf courses? The Highlands, the Mountain, and the Bay Harbor Clubs all are within short driving distance of each other. Stay in one location. Play additional rounds at the other locations to round out your trip. Whatever courses you play, do not miss a chance to play the Bay Harbor Club with its gorgeous views of Little Traverse Bay. If you want a five-star accommodation, stay at the highly acclaimed Bay Harbor Inn and enjoy treatment normally reserved for royalty. Even though it's winter, now is the perfect time to take advantage of their early discounts and book your summer golf trip to northern Michigan. I'm going to give you two ways to contact them, Carlos. Either call 888-407-0260, that's 888-407-0260, or visit boyne.com/golf to schedule your next golf adventure to northern Michigan.
And with that, we move on now to the Par 5 news, where every week Fred and I pick five very good stories, I'm sorry about that, and bring them to you. And Fred, you're going to start, as usual, tee it off with a PGA new event for women's in the 2019. So what is that?
Yeah, with Susie Whaley set to become the first woman to assume the presidency of the PGA of America, the PGA has announced new initiatives featuring women's golf. Last week, the PGA announced the formation of a new international team event for women professionals. The Women's PGA Cup will be a team competition for women PGA members from around the world. Current PGA President Paul Levy said, "We're excited to announce the Women's PGA Cup, which will promote and highlight the exceptional playing ability of our female PGA professionals and afford them the opportunity to represent our country against their PGA counterparts from around the globe. The potential of this event is vast, and we believe it will help grow women's professional golf both domestically and internationally. Each national team will be composed of five players plus a captain, who may or may not be a playing captain. The Women at PGA's Cup does not include a purse, but rather each team will vie for bragging rights in the honor of winning the cup while basking in the pride that comes with representing one's country in a distinct and unique international competition. The Women's PGA Cup will be a 54-hole stroke play event, with each team's lowest three scores being counted of the five after each round. The winning country will be the team with the lowest 54 aggregate score. The exact site and dates for the event will be announced at a later date. And the PGA also is promoting another women's initiative. Former LPGA Tour star and founder of the Legends Tour, Jane Blaylock, continues to work to advance the participation of women in golf. She will head a new initiative by the PGA, the Golf Clinics for Women, to be sponsored by MetLife. Incoming PGA of America President Susie Whaley said, "We're so happy to welcome Jane Blaylock, PGA, LPGA, to our team and to present the PGA Golf Clinics for Women. This clinic series affords the opportunity to impact future generations of women to be more successful on and off the golf course, plus enhance the connection of its participants to the game of golf and PGA professionals, LPGA teaching, and club professionals around the country. Clinic participants of all skill levels will learn about all aspects of social and business golf during an action-packed schedule, which includes plenty of personalized instruction, play, and assessments from PGA professionals and LPGA club and teaching professionals as well. A keynote speaker, breakfast, lunch, and a networking reception." You can find a full schedule if any of these are close to you or a location you want to travel to. They can be found at the PGA.org website, and you look under PGA Golf Clinics Women Debut in 2018, Carlos.
That's one more tournament to put on our schedules to watch. So the action for the women continues to be picking up. Hey, history. History will be made once again at the home of golf in 2021 when the 150th Open is played at St. Andrews for the 30th time. The Open reaches its 150th birthday in 2021, and there's no more of a fitting venue than the old course at St. Andrews for it to be played. Golf's oldest major championship will be returning to the old course for the first time in 6 years after Zach Johnson lifted the claret jug at the home of golf in 2015. He beat Louis Oosthuizen and Mark Leishman in a playoff to win his second major championship after Masters Glory in 2007. Past St. Andrews champions include Louis Oosthuizen in 2010, Tiger Woods 2005 and 2000, John Daly 1995, Nick Faldo in 1990, Seve Ballesteros 1984, and the Golden Bear Jack Nicklaus 78 and 1970. If you want to go further back, well, J.H. Taylor, James Braid, Bobby Jones, Sam Snead, Peter Thomson, and Bobby Locke all triumphed there in St. Andrews Opens. After the first 12 Opens at Prestwick, the old course at St. Andrews hosted the 13th play-in in 1873 to be the first ever to be played over an 18-hole course. Instead of the three rounds of 12 holes at Prestwick, the Open was decided over two 18 holes. Tom Kidd triumphed that year and won a mere 11 pounds for his efforts. How times have changed. The 147th Open takes place later this year at Carnoustie. Number 148 will be held for the first time in 68 years at Royal Portrush next year. And in 2020, it'll be the 149th play-in held at Royal St. George in Kent. Martin Slumbers, the chief executive of the RNA, said, and I quote, "The championship enjoys a historic and celebrated relationship with the old course in St. Andrews, and we're excited to to be marking the occasion of the 150th championship at the Home of Golf in 2021. You know, the 150th Open will be taking place from July 11th to the 18th in 2021. And an open fact that I'm going to bring to you, the Open is the golf's oldest championship. It has been played since 1860 on iconic links golf courses. It's the sport's most international major championship, with qualifying events on every single continent. Staged by the R&A, the Open delivers an annual economic benefit of up to £100 million to its host region, while the championship's commercial success, Fred, supports the development of the game worldwide.
The champion golfer of the year. Hey, if you're considering what new club to buy this winter, Swing by Swing released a survey that shows TaylorMade is a leader in equipment sales. Apparently, those Tour Pro endorsements on all those golf bags does work. The survey found that TaylorMade led in both the driver and iron categories. Survey results show TaylorMade with a 35% share of the market in drivers, Callaway far behind in second with a 22% share. In the iron category, TaylorMade has 22%, while Callaway is closer with 20%. The survey involved largely adult male golfers who play primarily on public golf courses. 41% play 40 or more rounds per year, while an additional 31% play 20 or more rounds per year. So 72% play quite a bit of golf, more than the average. The survey also identified intent to purchase. 49% indicated they intended to purchase a new driver this year, which represents approximately $137 million of retail. The new M lines produced by TaylorMade have received very favorable reviews by golfers, and the new Callaway products are also worth checking out. I've been hearing very good things about the new Rogue driver from Callaway this year. Another big name company worth checking out is Ping. They still produce a quality product line and rank with TaylorMade and Callaway. If you have a limited budget but still want a quality product, Tour Edge has upped their game and has two lines, the Hot Launch or the CVX, to fit any golfer. The Hot Launch is more suited for maybe the little bit higher handicap, where the CVX is better for the lower handicap golfer. Tour Edge also believes in individual fitting, and every one of their retail locations is complete with a fitting cart to make the perfect shaft and head for your golf swing. Overall, the survey revealed golfers prefer premium brands and are willing to and able to pay well over $700 million for golf equipment, drivers, fairway woods, hybrids, irons, wedges, and putters in 2018. If you're interested, you can find the results of the survey at swingbyswinggolf.com, Carlos.
Well, I mean, it also helps. You say that all those endorsements, but it also helps when the first five tournaments were won by TaylorMade users like DJ, John Rahm, Jason Day, Gary Woodland. And it was just now that Ted Potter Jr. using Ping stopped that from happening. So it also helps that way. They are getting a lot of exposure all over the place. Hey, now let's.
And I don't know if you swung any of the M products. They are really nice. I do like the M1 and M2 products. I haven't swung the new M3 and 4 hybrids yet, but I do like the drivers they came out with last year.
I haven't. The ones that I use are Callaway. I'm a Callaway guy. So I'm not putting them down for now. Let's put it that way, for now. Hey, let's talk about former Dallas Cowboy quarterback Tony Romo. He's going to be making his PGA Tour debut next month in Dominican Republic as a player, not a broadcaster. Romo, who now is the lead NFL analyst for CBS Sports, has received a sponsor's exemption to play in the Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship on March 22-25. The first-year event, if you don't remember why this is a first-year event, is because the Puerto Rico Open is not going to be held this year, so they needed to fill up the schedule. The Puerto Rico Open usually plays opposite the Dell Technologies Match Play, which is a WGC event that attracts the top 64 in the world. This year, it's going to be in Punta Cana, the resort and Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. And Tony Romo will be joining a short list of athletes who have tried to compete against those who play for a living. Mark Rypien, the former Washington Redskins quarterback, played the Kemper Open back in 1992. He shot rounds of 80 and 91 and missed a cut by just 27 shots. Not that much. Ken Harrelson, an all-star outfielder for the Boston Red Sox in 1968, qualified for the 1972 British Open at Muirfield and missed the cut by one shot. Now, that's good. John Brody qualified for the U.S. Open while playing for the San Francisco 49ers and later won on the PGA Tour Champion Circuit. Most recently, Golden State Warriors guard Steph Curry played a Web.com Tour event outside of San Francisco. He shot 74 and 74 and missed the cut by 11 shots. Tournaments are allotted unrestricted exemptions. Michelle Wee received them when she was a teenager, and there invariably are complaints from other players who might feel as though he is taking a spot from someone who has a better chance. Romo has tried to qualify for the U.S. Open three times, most recently failing to advance from the first stage a year ago. He reached the final stage in 2010 and was tied for 10th after the first 18 holes. But he started the next round with a quadruple bogey and was 7 over when play was stopped for the second time because of weather. The Cowboys had an organized team activity the next day, and he had to withdraw. Romo has a plus handicap of 3 in the index out of the Dallas National Golf Club, and occasionally he plays with Jordan Spieth. Romo says those rounds take the longest because he's asking Spieth for advice on his game. He also began seeing Spieth's chiropractor, Troy Van Bizen, to help recover from back surgeries that forced him out of football. Romo was playing this past week in the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am with Will Salatoris, and he was playing from the forward tees as an amateur. As a matter of fact, Spieth was asked about him, and he said, and I quote, "His short game is fantastic. He's walking in putts from 15 feet at home. His muscle memory and his hand-eye coordination is really special. So I have no doubt that he's going to be playing there very well. And he's really excited for the challenge, and he wants to beat the pros. That's kind of his goal. I mean, he thinks he can win this golf tournament if he played it." So, you know, the former number one golfer in the world was also heard that rumors that he could go pro full-time in the future, and he's not shrugging off the possibility. He said he loves golf so much, he's going to practice it all the time, that that's all he's been doing. Yeah, I think that's not out of the realm at all, end of quote. Yeah, that's a pretty strong endorsement from one of the best golfers in the world today. For his part, Fred Romo is ready to get down to brass tacks. He said that if he played well, he would be open to more sponsors' exemptions. And he said, if you don't play well, it's like a free agent in football. You get one shot, hopefully you do well. So I don't know, if he hasn't been able to qualify yet for the U.S. Open, which is what he has been trying most, I would see him better on a Web.com Tour, Fred, rather than the PGA Tour.
Yeah, he's going to have a learning curve. I don't care how good of an athlete he is. You don't just walk out and start playing professional golf, you know, in a year or maybe even 2 years. You know, if he wants to, you know, Johnny Bench was a pretty good athlete, and he's strong and all that stuff, but it took him about 5 years to really kind of get the feel of it. And, you know, playing really good amateur golf is a lot different than playing any level of professional golf. It's not even close. So he's got a learning curve there. It's going to take him a little bit, but he's really hooked. you know, they were laughing that, Nance was laughing that Romo will take a putter with him. And at the, on the commercial breaks and during the halftime, he'll be putting in the booth or someplace. You know, he'll be he'll go find someplace to putt when there's a downtime in the broadcast. So he's into it. Hey, this is something that you know kind of has been happening, but Jack Nicklaus made it official last week. Both Golf Week and Global Golf Post had stories about Jack Nicklaus. Announcement to step down from running the day-to-day operations of his companies. He will remain co-chairman of Nicklaus Companies, but investor Howard Milstein will become executive chairman. Nicklaus explained that he's making the move in order to focus more on charity work with an emphasis on efforts focused on children's health care and his family. Jack said, I'm 78 years old and while my health is excellent and I have a great deal of energy and enthusiasm, it became apparent by last fall that it was time for me to spend more time on these other activities. I didn't want to make a big deal out of it, and there's no reason for me to do so because I will continue to support the Nicklaus companies, and I want the company to be successful. However, my life has changed, and I wish to support my wife as well as other family members in any endeavor in which they are involved. Milstein purchased 49% of the company 10 years ago in 2007 for $145 million. The Nicklaus companies are responsible for more than 400 golf course designs around the world and includes Nicklaus-branded products such as golf balls, wine, ice cream, restaurants, beverages, footwear, and apparel. The announcement does not mean Nicklaus is moving away from design work. He plans to remain active in current projects and may consider some future ones. Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news for tonight. And let's go right into, you know, talk a little bit about French Lick. If you have not visited the French Lick Resort in southern Indiana, what are you waiting for? The resort has two fantastic championship golf courses. The Donald Ross course, first opened for play in 1917. For Ross lovers, it is a classic Ross design, using the natural hills and contours to shape the course. Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship on the Ross course, and the Sumatra Tour annually hosts an event here. The Pete Dye course sits atop the second highest peak in Indiana, and if the golf course isn't hard enough, the views of the surrounding countryside will distract you from your golf game. The course has also hosted several major events. The PGA of America held the 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course. Plus, it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA Championship. The first ever Senior Women's LPGA Championship on the Legends Tour was held here last year and will be hosted by French Lick again in 2018. The West Bay Nin was once the eighth wonder of the world. Its 200-foot domed atrium is still a wonder today. Do yourself a favor and visit FrenchLick.com to book your next golf trip today. French Lick needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news. Now, it's time for our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week. Her name is Eloise Trainer. She founded the Futures Tour in 1980 because she wanted a place to test herself with other professional golfers. She began the tour for young women who were not eligible for LPGA Tour events in Tampa, Florida, and it was called the Tampa Bay Mini Tour, which evolved into the nationwide Futures Tour and was eventually purchased by the LPGA to become the official developmental tour for women professional golfers, now known as the Symetra Tour. So, Fred, tell us all about this interview that we have with Eloise Trainer.
Yeah, I happened to meet her during the PGA Golf Show in Orlando, and after talking with her for a few minutes, I knew I had to get her on tape for the show. The Sumatra Tour, as we know it today, began as a very minor mini tour in Florida and eventually grew into a nationwide series of tournaments that allowed young women a chance to play and work on their games to earn a spot on the LPGA Tour. Being without LPGA Tour status in 1980, Eloise simply wanted a place to play and had the foresight to start the mini tour on her own. So, Carla, she's a remarkable woman. I really enjoyed talking to her. So if you would, go ahead and play this little short interview.
Let's play it.
We're here at Lake Nona in Orlando, Florida, and we are just tickled to death to be talking with Eloise Trainer, who was the original person that began the Futures Tour, and I believe it was 1980, and you said it came about out of the Tampa Mini Tour.
Well, it did. I wanted to play golf. I wanted to play competitive golf, but I had no experience, so I felt I'll start a tour, and I'll be able to play on it. Which I did. I called it the Tampa Bay Mini Tour at the time. And I did that. I ran two tournaments, and I realized I had to do one or the other, either run the tour or continue trying to play competitive golf and learn to play competitive golf. I chose to continue with the tour and running tournaments, scheduling events. And for 3 years, I ran the Tampa Bay Mini Tour. After that, it evolved into a national tour, which we titled the Futures Golf Tour.
We were talking with Kay McMahon earlier today, and we have to kind of put this in context. Back then, the spots on the LPGA Tour were pretty hard to find. So if you didn't make it, get those two or three spots from Q School, you had no place to play.
Collegiate golf is phenomenal. Collegiate programs are phenomenal. They fill a great, great void, if you will, or place for players to gain their competitive experience. But once you get turned pro, or once you get to the point where you want to see if you can make it on the LPGA Tour, there were no places to play. And so it really did fill a need that many, many women took advantage of. I'm lucky enough to know Rosie Jones and Meg Mallon, Michelle McGann from the older school, and perhaps more recently, Kari Webb. I don't know Michelle Lee. She started a little later after me. It's fun to go out to LPGA tournaments and see these players that I had the pleasure of meeting back then.
And could you imagine back in the day, back in the early 80s, when you started the Futures Tour, that it would end up growing to what has become the Sumatra Tour today?
Interestingly, when I left in 2000, my goal was for the purses to be no less than $50,000, which we got to. My other goal was that we would have a schedule of approximately 20 to 24 tournaments, which we got to. And my third goal was to have the recognition of the LPGA as their feeder system tour, which we got two years before I left, approximately. So I had reached all the goals that I had wanted for myself, for the players, for the tour. In the year 2000, I was able to comfortably pass it on, if you will.
We follow the LPGA Tour and, of course, the Sumatra Tour, watching the young girls come out of college, get on to the Sumatra, and then on to the LPGA. We watch it all very closely. To have the foresight and really just the time, you just wanted a place to play.
Thank you. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was an exciting time. It still is. Don't get me wrong. It was like you look at the founder's film of the LPGA, which is a phenomenal film. It was a lot like that. Truly, it was a lot like that in our place. And I was lucky enough to be there.
We've been talking with the founder of the Futures Tour, Eloise Trainer. Thank you so much for coming on Back 9 Report.
I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for asking me.
There you have it. That was Eloise Trainer, and she mentioned the LPGA had 13 founders, but the road to LPGA had one. And that was Eloise Trainer. So thanks to her vision, now we have what it's called the Sumatra Tour, which is the developmental tour for women professional golfers, Fred.
Yeah, you know, some of the best interviews that I've ever had the chance to do, like Carol Mann, or, you know, speaking with Eloise and some of the other ladies that came up in the early days of the women's golf movement, so interesting, the barriers that they had to break through and what they had to go through to play. It's really interesting stuff, Carlos. I always enjoy when I get a chance to talk to these people.
Most definitely. And with that, we wrap up our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week. Thank you, Eloise, for all that you did for the Future Store now and for being with us in the show. Hey, let's move on now to the practice range where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each of us take our own shots at it. But this week, you know, every now and then, Fred and I also pick the topic of the impact of golf on the charities, which are part of every tournament that is held on a year-round basis. It is important because people have to know the impact golf is making in the lives of so much people that have needs on a daily basis. The first line of defense for many causes in the world are the charities that go and pick up one of them and decide to make it their way of life to help out those in need. Whether it is a small nonprofit or a worldwide organization, charities are an integral part of every community. Charities change the lives of people in need every day, with even the smallest of donations making a large impact in a community. However, a charity relies on your support to continue their work in the community, and if you haven't done so, I urge you to pick one up and contribute at anything that you can. And golf does its part. To understand this better, let's start stating the economic impact of golf as a whole according to Golf 2020. Golf is a $136.8 billion total economic impact golf in America, including direct, indirect, and induced impacts. $68.8 billion total size of the golf economy nationally. $55.6 billion is the total wage income from about 2 million U.S. jobs. 15,000 plus is the approximate number of U.S. golf facilities, with more than 10,000 open to the public. $20.6 billion are total travel expenditures produced by the golf industry. $5.6 billion is the total amount spent on golf supplies. $523 million is the total spent on golf-related media, including books, magazines, DVDs, etc. 1 in 75 jobs is in the U.S. is impacted by the golf industry, and that is by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. $37 is the median green fee in the U.S. 8 out of 10 golfers play public golf. And $1.98 million is the number of U.S. jobs impacted by the U.S. golfing industry. Fred, there's a big word called reciprocity, and golf certainly fits that bill. How much is it raised annually for charity by the LPGA and the PGA Tour stops?
Well, that's about $200 million between those two, but that's just a very small percentage of the total of $3.9 billion that's raised every year through golf efforts. You know, last week we saw the glitter and blitz of the PGA Tour on the Monterey Peninsula, but the AT&T National Pro-Am is more than just a gathering of Hollywood stars, television celebrities, professional athletes, and corporate CEOs that pay the big bucks to play with the PGA Tour pros. AT&T is proud of the money raised every year for charity. In 2017, that amount was over $12.8 million from just this tournament alone, and it has raised well over $100 million since its inception by Bing Crosby in 1937. The Players' Championship is also one of the PGA Tour's larger contributors to their charitable organizations. In 2016, the players donation to charity was $8.5 million, which was $400,000 more than the year before. The total amount generated since the players began in 1977 now exceeds $84 million. Just here in Ohio, Carlos, to give you some insight on more of a regional level, the Memorial and the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship held down in Columbus every year, two tournaments, raise a combined $4.3 million every year. Since 1976, the Memorial has raised over $29 million, and the Web.com Tour has exceeded $9.3 million. The Marathon Classic, held right here in Toledo, donated $523,000 last year to 21 children's charities. This money is used it's so important for the kids here in Northwest Ohio. It really makes a difference in a lot of lives. Carlos, the story is the same in every community that hosts the PGA Tour, the LPGA, the Web.com, or the Champions Tour across the country.
Fred, before I talk about the charity, because I love the reason for being, I want to take a moment to say that real heroes don't have a name on their back of their jersey. They have their country's flag on the arm of their uniform. You put on the uniform of our country, even knowing that in doing so, it would take you away from your own family. The sacrifices that you have taken upon yourself to protect people like Fred and me and our families, to keep us safe in our beds at night, to worship as we believe, these may go unnoticed by some, but not by us. To our men and women in our armed forces, thank you for your service and all that you do. Thank you for our freedom, and may God in heaven always watch and protect you. And the motto of this charity says it's best. Honor their sacrifice and educate their legacy. Since 2007, the Folds of Honor has carried forth the singular, noble mission to provide educational scholarships to spouses and children of Americans' fallen and disabled service members. And how they do it? Their most important initiative is their Patriot Golf Day, America's largest nationwide golf fundraiser. You can either locate a participating course or register or dedicate your game to create an online fundraising page. Last year, they got in contributions, gifts, and grants from fundraising events, $17.9 million. You know, there are more than 1 million disabled and fallen service members affected by war. Nearly 2 million dependents of military heroes are adversely affected by war. And more than $9 billion is the cost to provide educational scholarships to the dependents of all fallen and disabled members. So the Folds of Honor, they're really proud to have a cumulative average ratio of 86% of every dollar raised going to their scholarship program. Since 2007, the Folds of Honor has awarded nearly 16,000 educational scholarships. Last year alone, people helped award 3,509 educational scholarships, of which 2,416 were for higher ed and 1,093 for children. And the Folds of Honor has awarded scholarships in all 50 states, including also my own Puerto Rico, Guam, Italy, Australia, Philippines, Ecuador, and Japan. I mean, this is one of the great charities that is benefit by golf. And if you want to contact them, hey, contact at foldsofhonor.org or just go to foldsofhonor.org and you can get there. I also want to mention three other quickly here before I move it on to you, Fred. I want to mention the Salute Military Golf Association, which is based on Olney Golf Park in Maryland. The Salute Military Golf Association there is a nonprofit. Its mission is to provide rehabilitative golf experiences and family-inclusive opportunities for post-9/11 wounded war veterans in an effort to improve the quality of life for these American heroes. And they have a strong relationship with Walter Reed Army Medical Center, and it has equipped more than 500 wounded warriors with properly fitted clubs and offered free lessons to 1,000 combat wounded veterans. And they do it all because also the contributions of the golf tournaments. The National Alliance for Accessible Golf, there are approximately 57 million Americans with some form of disability, or 19% of the total U.S. population. It was formed in 2001 and ensures the opportunity for all individuals with disabilities to play the game. The organization has granted more than $580,000 to 7,000 participants in 19 states. And finally, I'm going to mention the Wounded Warrior Project, which raises awareness and enlists the public's aid for the needs of injured service members by offering unique direct programs and services. Billy Casper Golf, owner and operator of more than 150 golf courses nationwide,
hosts the world's largest golf outing each August to generate funds for the organization. And since its inception 4 years ago, they have donated more than $2 million to the Wounded Warrior Project. In 2014, the Billy Casper Golf hosted more than 10,000 golfers at 118 of its golf courses, raising more than $887,000. So, Fred, golf is all around, helping everywhere, and this is just a sample of what they are helping.
Yeah, I'm going to mention one more, too, while we're talking about this. Something we talk about all the time, the Evan Scholars Foundation, which I think is just one of the greatest things out there. The Evan Scholars Foundation now is funding 965 former caddies and giving them college scholarships to schools that cost over $15 million a year. They have a goal to place over 1,000 students by 2020, and they're going to meet that goal actually a year ahead. They're going to meet it next year. So another worthy charity there involved through golf. But, Carlos, last week at their annual meeting, the USGA announced a new initiative in fundraising. They called it, say, Driving Golf Forward, to help fund innovation and research while boosting inclusivity within the sport. Mike Davis, USGA Executive Director, said the health and future of golf are fueled by strong leadership, resources, and meaningful initiatives. This campaign will support and develop programs that positively impact our game and create new opportunities for golf to grow and endure. They're going to fund some cutting-edge innovation and industry-leading research to help golfer experience. They want to make sure they're maximizing the use of water and nutrients and chemicals, and also to save energy by 25% by 2025. So they have some noble goals. The foundation will support the USGA's long-term goal of boosting inclusivity in the sport through increases in participation by juniors, as well as broadly supporting accessibility and adaptive golf, improving golfer experience. There's some other things involved, but to sum it all up, golf has an active community of individuals who support efforts to grow the game, and we've heard they want to do even more, said this USGA Foundation person. And Driving Golf Forward provides an opportunity to play a direct role in the future of golf and invest in important programs that will make a difference. So USGA, they get the big money from Fox to broadcast all of their events, and they're trying to raise some more money from this foundation to improve the game and help it grow and make sure it stays on sound footing going forward, Carlos.
Hey, golf and charitable giving go hand in hand, just like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Had to throw that in there. But the PGA Tour and its tournaments last year donated more than $166 million to charitable causes, a new record. And the sports overall charitable impact, like you said, is $3.9 billion annually, according to Golf 2020. That surpasses that of the Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, and NHL combined. Those that get the big bucks, the bigger bucks on TV and the bigger ratings and everything else, they are not a match together jointly to the charitable impact that the golf has right now every single year. Why? Let me tell you this. You may not know, but the PGA Tour events are structured as nonprofit organizations so that they can donate 100% of the net proceeds, after expenses, of course, to charity, with revenue streams that include the title sponsors, secondary sponsors, individual licensing fees, and ticket sales. Nowhere else you see something like that. That's why where you see is giving, really, it's the most important thing that you can see after, of course, playing the game of golf, Fred.
Yeah, Carlos, for me, the charitable contributions in golf is all about the 12 million golfers that participate in one of the 143,000 charity golf outings at one of the 12,700 golf clubs across the country. Those, in conjunction with these professional golf tournaments, that's where that $3.9 billion comes from. As I mentioned, about $200 million comes from the PGA, the LPGA, and the Champions Tour. The rest of that comes from people like you and me playing in golf outings or fundraisers in your local community. Together, as I mentioned, you know, average golfers, there's approximately 20 million golfers in the United States. That means over 50% play in some kind of outing every year. The average, each event average is about 26,000. And that totals up to be $3.7 billion. That's just, I mean, that's an amazing number to me, Carl. That just blows me away. So if you've participated in a golf outing or benefit this year, this last year, at your local golf course, you should feel very good about yourself and give yourself a high five. So, you know, although golf is portrayed as an elitist sport, which limits the ability of less fortunate Americans to participate, I would argue that Americans with disposable income that play in charitable golf outings contribute more than their fair share and support their communities. The gigantic amount of charitable dollars generated through golf is unprecedented. The mass media does not address this single fact nearly enough, and is missing a great story, Carlos.
You know, the close, I have two words for everybody. Get involved. There are many ways to get involved with charity through the game of golf without opening your checkbook. One, volunteer. Impact the lives of young people by donating your time. Also, research opportunities to volunteer with local charity golf tournaments or junior organizations. Number two, you can lend your voice. You can tell your story by speaking to congressional leaders about why golf is more important, more than a game to you. And finally, you can support through social media. Post to your channels about golf's importance to the economy, the environment, and how it provides fitness activity for millions to enjoy. As you can see, golf is a great vehicle to support charitable causes. Everyone can help make a difference with the game of love. And with this, we'll wrap up our practice range, our topic of the week. Hope you enjoyed it and got some more information about the importance of golf in the charities in the world. So, Fred, any other final words before we go to the final part?
No, I think we pretty much covered it, Carlos. You mentioned get involved. You don't have to spend a lot of money. One of the things here in town, like the Marathon Classic, he needs about 1,200 volunteers to run the tournament. I know if you go to a big event like the Memorial, I think they need about 2,000 or 1,800, something like that. And so you can volunteer to work at a tournament. It does have some nice little side perks. If you're a golfer, you get to play the course maybe one day a year or something like that. On your off time, you don't have to be here all the time. You can get into the tournament for free and watch it when you're not working. But when you are working, you're helping raising this money for the charities that are supported by the tournament, because these tournaments have to have these volunteers to make everything go. So that's one way you can help also, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our practice range, where we talk today about the impact, the charitable impact of golf. Now, let's start with our final pots. As usual, I get the first two, and I'm going to talk to you about, if you watch annually the AT&T Pebble Pro Beach Pro-Am, you might already know that CBS lead announcer Jim Nance has a home in the Monterey area near Pebble Beach. I mean, he talks about it. They even have shown it. He has built a replica of the famed number 7 par 3 in his backyard. Last week, he hosted some of the CBS guys and the crew from the Dan Patrick Show to a cookout, which included a closest to the pin competition. Nance claimed home field advantage and had the closest shot until his sidekick, Sir Nick Faldo, holed one to claim bragging rights. If you're interested, you can see the video of the winning shot on Faldo's Twitter feed at NickFaldo006. 006, like he says, just one less than 007. You know, that is a tough place to live, right? Yeah, right. I mean, he must have a great life there. Now, let's talk about Inbae Park. Her status as one of South Korea's most important athletes was confirmed Friday during the opening ceremony at the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Park was one of the final Olympic torchbearers, one of the last to run in the stadium. South Korea's affection for its female golfers was on display. Sayri Park, whose success launched the country's rise to dominance, helped carry the South Korean flag into the stadium. Soyeon Ryu was also on site as part of the opening. The ceremony featured 2,900 athletes from 90 nations. And, you know, well, I know our final pods are supposed to be short pieces, but I think this one deserves a bit of expanding on it because some people in golf still don't get the impact of the Olympics, especially outside of the U.S. And you all know how I feel about the Olympics, whether it's winter or summer. While Sayri Park will always be remembered for inspiring a nation to become a golf power, Inbae Park moved out of Sayri Park's shadow as the most accomplished Korean golfer with her Tour de Force performance at the Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro 2 years ago. Park turns Park's legacy into gold, the first gold medal in the history of women's golf. Yes, it was the first, because when Margaret Abbott shot 47 to win first place in a nine-hole Olympic competition in Paris in 1900, she didn't take home gold. She took home a porcelain bowl. Just like Sayri Park did winning a U.S. Women's Open all those years ago, Inbae Park kept her homeland awake until the wee morning hours with her Olympic performance. When Park took the medal stand, it was 2:08 in the morning back in Seoul, and yet legions of South Koreans were tuned in watching. The moment was televised live by three different Korean networks. Three, not one, three of the major Korean networks. So at 29, she's already an LPGA Hall of Famer. She's also a former world number one with seven major championship titles. Only six players have won more majors than her in the history of the game. And there you see the impact that golf, and especially on her, what she has done in the Olympics is the way to see and express all that her country, she's meaning to them. She's expected to make her 2018 LPGA debut at the HSBC Women's World Championship, Fred.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Sayri Park there, and of course she had a fantastic career, and as you mentioned, really stimulated golf in South Korea. But, you know, she won the Marathon Classic five times.
Just saying.
Hey, Carlos, our good friend Tony Deere wrote an article for Links Magazine about Mike Nuzzo designing a first course that he's done for over 10 years with a limited land area to place the course he's working on. He came up with a new concept. He included a putting course, a short course, or executive nine, and a nine-hole regulation course. I've been saying this for years, Carlos. This gives golfers the ability to play for 30 minutes if you just want to play the putting course, or an hour if you want to play the short course, or 2 hours if you want to play a full regulation nine. Plus, the putting course and short course are perfect for beginners or juniors to enjoy the game and not feel like it's an exercise in futility. Short courses and putting courses are catching on around the country, and I think all golf will be the better for it. Ex-President George Herbert Walker Bush will receive an award from the ASGCA, the American Society of Golf Courses Association, Golf Course, yeah, Architects Association, Donald Ross Award. It's given to a person who has made significant contribution to the game of golf and the profession of golf course architecture. President Bush exemplifies the highest traditions of golf, from displaying the values of good sportsmanship to respecting pace of play and everything in between. ASGCA is proud to add President Bush to the list of distinguished Donald Ross Award recipients. Staying with awards for 2000, Carlos, Ben Crane will receive the GWAA's Charlie Bartlett Award at the annual dinner Wednesday before the Masters. It's given to a playing professional for their unselfish contributions to the betterment of society. Crane said, I'm extremely honored to be the recipient of such an amazing award, and it's an honor for our family to be associated with such a great award and list of recipients. There's a whole list of stuff that Crane's done, but he's very involved in charitable giving. I know he's not been playing the best of late, but he's done great off the golf course. One more thing I want to mention tonight, Carlos, is that I just got notification that the Concession Cup, the Amateur Golf Alliance and the Concession Cup announced the dates for the third installment of the biannual amateur team match play competition. It features a team of mid-ams and senior amateurs representing the United States, versus a team from Great Britain and Ireland. It will be hosted at the Concession Golf Club once again near Bradenton, April 16th through the 21st. It's a world-class experience for the participants. Usually have Tony Jacklin and Jack Nicklaus involved because it's held in memory of Nicklaus's great concession to Jacklin in 1969. If you want more information on that, you can visit concessioncup.com, concessioncup.com, or get a hold of me, and I'll get you the information. Carlos, that's all I have for tonight.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Eloise Trainer. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in also on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Introducing McDonald's new $1-$2-$3 menu with favorites for $1, $2, or $3, like the McChicken, the Bacon McDouble, the Happy Meal, and...
A weekend getaway with the husband and kids?
No. But the $1-$2-$3 menu could help you save for one.
Especially if we leave the kids at home.
With Grandma, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Build whatever meal you want with favorites on McDonald's new $1-$2-$3 menu. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.